the level of 1 times 10 to the minus 18. So this is the people we are working with, all hard-working people. And we can skip this kind of introduction because of kind of explanation given by Eckhart and Andre Bianco. So our concern will be is what will be the most suitable atomic system. So as discussed already, we need haiku reference from which reason optical frequency will be preferable. And for accuracy aspect, we need a minimum atom container interaction. And to realize this, we designed the optical lattice. And to improve stability, we need many atoms as possible. And this is already shown by in some times. And so this is the progress of clocks. And our optical lattice clocks has even quicker progress in 10 years. And we are achieving 10 to the minus 18. And we started lattice clock experiment from 2001, where I proposed the lattice clock scheme to interrogate millions of atoms simultaneously, which will improve the stability of ion clocks by million times. This is the motivation. To trap many atoms as possible, we design a special optical lattice where we tune the trapping potential for the upper state and ground state equal. This is to remove the light shift perturbation from atomic transition. Inside this optical lattice, we observe the atomic transition with the bare atomic transition frequency and the optical lattice perturbation, which is given by the differential polarizability of the upper state and ground state times the intensity of the trapping laser. But the point is, if we can tune the polarizability for the upper state and lower state, and we call this protocol the magic wavelength. If this is done, we can remove this perturbation and just the fourth order perturbation remains. And this is as low as 10 to the minus 18 level. And there are more than 20 groups in the world where lattice clocks are developed. And recent measurement is shown here. This is for the case of a strontium lattice clock. There are 5 measurements in the world, and they are agree with an uncertainty of 1 times 10 to the minus 15, which is given by the uncertainty of SI second. So we are already monitoring the fluctuation of SI second by using optical lattice. And this is also a appeal for the needs of a better definition of a second. So this is a topic I'm talking about, which is to go beyond 10 to the minus 17 limit. The first thing I will discuss is the cryogenic optical lattice clock. And we demonstrate the agreement of 2 clocks at 1 times 10 to the minus 18. And we are also working with the mercury-based optical lattice clock, and we are measuring the ratio between the mercury-based lattice clock and strontium-based lattice clock. And we are also working with the network of lattice clocks, and we are working with the clock at the University of Tokyo and RIKEN. And I will show the preliminary result. And we are also looking for a new platform for our next generation lattice clock. And for this purpose, we are working with the Holocaust fiber first topic is the cryogenic lattice clock. There are a lot of works which claims the uncertainty at the 10 to the minus 18th level. But the thing is, there are no report which show the agreement at 1 times 10 to the minus 18. And for that purpose, the reduction of the blackbody radiation shift was crucial. When we wrote the formal proposal paper for the lattice clock, we conservatively wrote the uncertainty of the lattice clock to be 10 to the minus 70. The main reason for this uncertainty was the blackbody radiation shift. When we calculate the blackbody radiation shift at the room temperature, it was as big as 2 hertz. So it's quite difficult to achieve 10 to the minus 18 by controlling this blackbody radiation shift. And what we proposed at that point was, then we can reduce the temperature down to 70 K, liquid nitrogen temperature. Then the blackbody radiation shift go down quickly, and we may achieve 10 to the minus 17 uncertainty or something. This is a discussion we did 11 years ago. But now we need to do this kind of thing by ourselves to push our uncertainty of lattice clock. And this is the experimental this calculation of dipole polarizability for the clock state, singlet STL ground state and triple P0 upper state. As a function of the frequency. If you irradiate the laser tuned to the magic wavelength, we have the same polarizability for the upper state and lower state. Because of this, we will have the same right shift for the excited state and ground state. And this is the basic idea for the optical lattice clock. But the problem is, when we work with the room temperature environment, we have a huge blackbody radiation according to Planck's law. The energy density of this blackbody radiation is proportional to T to the 4, which is the Stefan Boltzmann law. But the thing is, at the blackbody radiation energy range, which is around 10 microns for room temperature, the polarizability for the upper state and lower state is different. And as a result, upper state is more susceptible to the blackbody energy, and lower state is less susceptible to blackbody energy. And as a result, we have a blackbody radiation shift, which is roughly proportional to T to the 4. So what we can do is, if we reduce the temperature, environmental temperature, down to 70 K, then blackbody radiation energy is almost a line here. So we expect a dramatic decrease of the blackbody radiation shift. This is the idea. And there are a lot of activities, theoretically and experimentally. Derebianco calculated the very accurate differential polarizability, and people at PTB and NIST experimentally determined the blackbody radiation shift. And they discussed they can correct the blackbody radiation shift at the uncertainty of 10 to the minus 18. And I think this will be discussed by Sherman in the next talk. But experimentally, then, the problem would be to keep the homogeneity of the temperature homogeneity of the chamber at the level of 10 to the minus 18, or measuring the temperature at that precision. Our approach is to use cryo-clocks, where atoms are surrounded by low temperature walls. We started the experiment 3 years ago at Riken. This is almost an empty lab. And in 3 years, we constructed the cryogenic clock system. This is a very small stirring refrigerator, this kind of size. And we have a small head. And this cools down the cold head down to a 40K in a full power. And we usually operate at 90K. Even at 90K, blood body radiation shift is just 20 millihertz, which can be quite accurately controlled down to a sub-millihertz level. Another good thing working with the cryogenic setup is that temperature measurement can be rough. If we measure the temperature with uncertainty of 1K, that's good enough to say the black body radiation shift at the 10 to the minus 18 level. We prepare two setups, shown here and here. And this is one of the setups. This is the stirring pump, and this is the trapping chamber. And this is the illustration of the experiment. The thing we cared about is the Doppler shift. First order Doppler effect is quite serious at the precision of 10 to the minus 18. For example, if we want to achieve 10 to the minus 18 stability in 1 second, then the velocity of the apparatus should be controlled at the 10 to the minus 10 meter per second level. So we need to care about the thermal drift of the whole apparatus. For that purpose, we install a lot of interferometers to monitor the length change. And this is an example of the experiment. This is a cryogenic chamber, which is quite small, 20 millimeter size. And we have a small hole here, which is 0.5 millimeter diameter. And through this hole, we transfer the atoms into this cryogenic chamber. And in the beginning, we set the two chambers at 300K room temperature, and we check the identity of two clocks. So we have good overlap between the two clocks operated at 300K. And the next thing is to reduce one of the temperature down to 90K. Then atoms at this chamber have less black body radiation shift, which causes two health frequency change. So by doing so, we can directly determine the black body radiation shift in a spectroscopic way. And we repeated this kind of measurement as a function of temperature. So we can reproduce a very clean T to the 4 Stefan Boltzmann law. And from this plot, we can extract the dynamic correction term. And these numbers are quite good agreement with the Peterbe experiment, which measured these numbers by indirect measurement. And by controlling the black body shift by this cryogenic setup, we compare two clocks. And partly because of the good stability of lattice clock, we achieved 2 times 10 to the minus 18 stability in 2 hours of measurement, which is a good advantage over ion clock. In the case of ion clock, this kind of measurement will require tens of 10 days of measurement time. Because of this quick measuring process, we can repeat the This should be a scattering of but the data gone somewhere. So maybe please refer to the archive paper. We repeated the measurement of a frequency comparison between the two clocks over a month, and we achieved the agreement of 1 times 10 to the minus 18 with statistical uncertainty of 1.6 times 10 to the minus 18. And this is the uncertainty budget for the clock comparison. So, clock body radiation shift was the major limitation for lattice clock. But this is significantly reduced by this cryogenic setup. So the next problem we need to confront would be the multipolar interaction of trapping laser and atoms. This is the next thing we need to do. So one of the clock is done. So to investigate physics, we need to establish a network of clocks by establishing a network between different atomic elements. We can say something about the constancy of a constant or coupling to the gravity or something, as discussed already. And by connecting two clocks, we can investigate the geodetic thing, such as the gravitational frequency shift for the geodesy purpose. And for that purpose, we need to establish a very stable frequency link. And as mentioned by Andre already, they have a 900 kilometer fiber link in Germany. And in parallel, we are working with a mercury-based optical lattice clock. The main reason to start with mercury is the small blackbody radiation shift. And because of the small dipole polarizability at the blackbody radiation range, we can expect a 10 to the minus 18 accuracy at the room temperature operation. And another good thing is, because of the larger nuclear charge, mercury have a higher sensitivity to a alpha variation. So by comparing mercury and strontium clock, we can investigate this kind of alpha variation. And now we have a very stable reference clock of strontium. And using that, we measure mercury clock frequency, bridged by a frequency comb. And this is the mercury clock stability. We achieved a few times 10 to the minus 17 in 2000 something. So in the long run, we expect to achieve 1 times 10 to the minus 18 stability by increasing atom number. Then we can say such number, for example, most of the people discussed the alpha variation in a longer time scale. But we can say the alpha variation in a very short time scale, if alpha is oscillating in a very short time period. For example, 10 to the minus 18 oscillation in 1 second or not. So by differentiating strontium clock, we can say the number for the mercury clock, mercury divided by strontium. So this is still a preliminary result, but the good thing for us is that to do this kind of measurement, we need a referencing clock at the National Meteorology Institute. But now, we can prepare a reference clock by ourselves. This is a very good step for us.
How long do you have to be at 10 to the minus 18 at the Hertz variations? How long will it take, do you think?
How long do you mean?
I mean,
experimentally?
Yes, experimentally, yes.
I don't know. Yeah.
5 years, 10 years?
Maybe 2 years, 3 years? Optimistically. So, and the next topic is the frequency link between two clocks. And we established the frequency link between University of Tokyo and Riken. So, the gravitational redshift, which is 10 to the minus 16 per meter, can be measurable in a very short time. So the relativistic effect becomes a personal effect. And this is one of the experiments we did in Japan. We compared the two clocks at University of Tokyo and NICT, whose height difference is 50 meters. And we measured the 2.6 Hertz frequency shift due to a gravitational redshift. Clocks become a quantum sensor for the gravitational potential. This is a new role for next generation clocks. And we are now planning a more precise frequency comparison between two clocks at the University of Tokyo and Riken, which is 15 kilometers apart. We got a fiber of a 30 kilometer fiber connecting two places. And our strategy is to use is to use 1.4 micron laser for the connection, which is twice the clock wavelength of a strontium clock. So we can omit the frequency comb to connect the two clocks. And this is the experimental setup. This is a cryogenic strontium clock I introduced minutes ago. And this is another ...30 kilometers long. And we have a collaboration with the Geospatial Information Authority of Japan, where they are good at measuring the height difference. So we asked them to measure the height difference between the University of Tokyo and Riken. And they say they can measure it within the uncertainty of meter level. Very good information. So, who will you know the difference between the two? When they estimate the potential difference between the two places. And from benchmark of our RIKEN Institute, and they repeat the labeling, and finally they arrived at the optical table of our lab with their gravity. So I will skip
you
this.
Have another 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is the result we are measuring. So we compare two clocks. One is at RIKEN and one is at the university. And we share the same laser at the two places. We send the clock laser to university. Because of the delay of the fiber, there is a 0.15 millisecond delay at the university. But anyway, by synchronously measuring the clock frequency between the two places, we achieved the comparison stability of a few times 10 to the minus 17 for an averaging time of 1,000 seconds. So if we can use this, for example, a dark matter search proposed Derebianco, but the thing is, this distance is too close for the search. So what we can do with these apparatus is, for example, this kind of thing. We have clock at the university and the another clock at RIKEN. And we can measure the frequency difference of these clocks quite accurately.
Yeah, there's a question. Yeah.
Your previous slide, that you think why that the predicted value and the measured value are not in agreement?
Not yet. So our measurement is not accurate enough. So we are waiting. So I know the value in my mind, but I didn't show that value to the researcher. So I'm testing the researcher. So if you have an ion sphere of 1 kilometer radius, and if this moves, then we can see a clock shift. So this can be a new sensing device. This looks like a radar, but this is not a radar. This monitors a distortion of a stealth. So this is the last topic. Portable device in a car you can do car navigation by speeding and you can compensate the overspeed. And if you have heavy resources in the ground, you can detect as a gravitational redshift. So lattice clock consists of optical standing wave and trapped atom, which can be prepared inside the whole core fiber. This is the idea. We prepare the 30 millimeter whole core fiber, and we put atoms inside the fiber and extract the atoms from the fiber. And we choose the rather large diameter hollow core, which is 40 micrometer radius. And the reason is to reduce the atom surface interaction below 10 to the minus 17 level to make a good clock. Or in the another way, by measuring this clock shift, we can investigate the atom surface interaction at this rather long range. we did the initial measurement by filling atoms inside a standing wave of magic wavelength laser inside the holocore fiber. This is a 3 millimeter long holocore fiber, and this is the cross section of the fiber. In the beginning, we investigate the spectrum at the signet S0 to 3PP1 spin forbidden transition of 7.5 kilohertz natural line width. We carefully reduced the collisional interaction between the atoms, and we finally got the nearly natural line width limited spectrum inside the holocore fiber. So we can say, at this level of uncertainty, there is no significant atom surface interactions. And what's interesting after that is that, so by reducing atom number, we observe a natural line with limited spectrum. But if you increase the number of atoms inside the fiber, then we observe an ugly spectrum of atoms inside the fiber. And this is the indication of the super radiance. If we assume a 20 microsecond lifetime, which is a natural, which corresponds to a natural line width of the strontium, if you increase the number, we observe very first decay of the atoms inside the fiber, which is due to a super radiance. So we are now going to a real crux spectrum on the 3PP0 upper state. And now we are observing 200 hertz. So this is the last one. So finally, we arrived at the starting point to further investigate the lattice clock uncertainty at 1 times 10 to the minus 18. So at this level, high stability of clock really helps. And in parallel, we are now looking for another lines to measure, such as a nuclear clock or a highly charged ion clock. Thank you very much for your attention.
Prevent your atoms from interacting with the walls in your photonic crystal fiber. Mm-hmm. Do you have two beams, or do you have a? I mean, because they, if you introduce them into the fiber, then you have one-dimensional optical lattice, so they will be three. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So the thing is, if we want to make a atomic clock, we don't like perturbation by an environmental effect. That's the reason.
Yeah, but then, I mean, you have one-dimensional optical lattice, mm-hmm. so your atoms should move toward the walls in your system, right?
So, inside the holocore fiber, atoms are trapped radially and axially.
Why radially?
Because we have a nearly Gaussian intensity distribution okay. of light inside the fiber. Okay. Okay. So atoms are trapped in the center of the whole core.
So your current experiments with strontium clocks, are you using a 2D lattice or 3D lattice?
So we are currently using a 1D lattice.
Okay. So I'm just surprised the collisional shift was relatively small.
Yeah. So. Now the atom occupancy in a single pancake potential is 1 or 2.
Okay.
So almost no collision. And this kind of fiber system will be also helpful to reduce collisions. So for example, just using 30 millimeter fiber, we can produce 10 to the 5 lattice sites inside the fiber. So we could trap 10 to the 5 atoms inside the fiber without collisions.
So
you
can
trap
the because we're already running late, can we wait for after?
Okay.
So this time,
thank you.